a.m. on August 8th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And as always, we have an amazing show lined up for you today. This morning in the studio, we are joined by millennial behavior expert Ryan Jenkins, and he has brought along Robbie Reese of Global Lead. And also, we have a kind of a last-minute replacement guest on the phone, Sandra Quince from Bank of America. Sandra, are you there? Are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Excellent. Good morning, and hi, guys.
Welcome, everybody.
Good morning.
So, as always, of course, we're going to grill our guests, make them very uncomfortable here in just a moment, because that's what we like to do. But and we'll be focusing today on sort of the challenges of having a multi-generational workforce and specifically what's different about the younger generation in today's workforce, the millennials, as they're called. But first, as always, we're going to jump over to Elizabeth for some business headlines.
So Turner bought this company Bleacher Report for $175 million.
I saw that.
Dollars. That's a pretty big transaction. This might be one of our.
Do we have an additional guest coming in?
Come on in.
Come on in. Welcome to the studio. We're live on the air, so you know you can't be quiet. You have to actually talk because this is not a video. So feel free to pull up a mic.
We'll get our other guests comfortable in here, and I'll keep going with the news. Baxter also this week broke ground on their $1 billion plant in Georgia. Now this is like up in, you know, not in the ATL, but Covington maybe or something like that.
Close
enough.
It's
a huge project. Won't be operational, it sounded like, until 2016. So
$1 billion. That's pretty big.
I know. It takes a while to build a $1 billion plant, but that's going to be a tremendous economic impact for the Georgia
I would like
economy.
Them to give me a little bit of money. That's what I'm saying. They could just, you know, if they have a billion to build something,
exactly.
They could throw a little money our way. Just saying. Just a thought.
Also, the UGA swimmers took home a gold medal at the Olympics.
Very exciting.
That was pretty cool. Local news. Jackson Securities merged with a top New York investment banking firm. And Governor Deal has said that he is not interested in pursuing another transportation referendum.
Okay, then.
So
guess that last one didn't go too well.
Mayor Reed and Governor Deal slightly disagree on this issue, but it's interesting. It's been interesting hearing the aftermath of the big T-splost gone splat at the ballot box.
Right. Maybe we should start calling it T-splat. Hey, you guys, by the way, feel free to chime in. This is an open forum, so you know,
Absolutely.
Feel free to jump right in. You don't have to.
You guys are
sitting
doing
there
great.
Very quietly and politely. We don't. And Sandra, you too. Feel free to hop on in there and make comments as you will. Remember though that you are live on the air. So no, I'm kidding. You can say whatever you want.
well, speaking of which, you know, the Chick-fil-A controversy has gotten crazy these days.
I was
and
waiting.
A lot of people have, you know, in trying to voice their own opinion on the matter, really kind of stepped in it. So the big takeaway is be very careful on how you're reacting to this controversy. There's a lot of different sides of this issue, and people are stepping out and, you know, stepping into the restaurant, doing all kinds of things to voice their stance on.
I'm so glad you brought this up because, you know, I wanted to talk about it. I know we've talked in the past about trying to not be controversial because we're a business show and we're here to talk about business for the most part. However, this is about business and you cannot really avoid this topic.
It's now, been fascinating as it has unfolded. And
yeah, one of the interesting things that I thought, I don't know what you guys think, but I have read a bunch of articles about people doing exactly what you're saying, stepping into a Chick-fil-A or over to one in a food court and sort of harassing the people that work there, either pro or against. I mean, either they're like, go you go with your Chick-fil-A opinions. Yeah. Or they're like, you suck, you know, you're stupid and whatever. And I'm thinking like these poor kids that work at Chick-fil-A, they didn't do anything. They're just trying to make a few bucks, put themselves through school or whatever, bring home some money to the family, whatever.
I just find it so hard to be angry at that barbecue sauce. It's just so,
so tasty. Well, it is an interesting topic.
Well, it's such a much loved establishment, especially here in the South, but really all over.
And I hate to say this because I'm not even going to say what my opinion is because I don't want us to spend the whole hour on this. But they do have delicious chocolate chip cookies. And I'm not sure that I'll be able to. I don't know if I can go there anymore. But I do think it's very interesting from a business perspective, both as a business and how you put your opinions forward. And also as a consumer, what do you do with that now? Because if you truly want to be a responsible consumer, you would have to spend all day Googling, I think, to try to figure out what companies it was okay to buy from. Because right. just because Dan Cathy stepped out and made a public statement, he put his company on the forefront. But lots of other companies are doing things you may or may not like.
Probably most billion-dollar companies are funneling money in one way or another
that you might not
something
like.
That you might not totally agree with.
And where do you draw the line? It's like if Amazon's doing something, well, does that mean you stop reading books on your Kindle or do you stop ordering from Zappos? And you know, there's so many.
Right. You know, and you, I think a lot of people don't even realize what companies are connected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then you're like, well, Urban Outfitters did something wrong. Does that mean Anthropology? Like, I don't even know who owns what anymore. So it is pretty interesting. And I think it's going to be a debate that probably goes on for quite some time.
Yes. Well, speaking of controversy in the workplace, not controversy necessarily, but people having different opinions and different ideas and different ways of going about things. That's really what our topic is here today with talking about the millennial workforce. Ryan, you're the true expert here as the millennial behavior expert. And really, I think we want to start with just kind of giving some background on the current generational landscape in the workplace and what are some of the things that companies are having to think about these days as we're seeing more millennials enter the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a hot topic right now, and there's four generations in the workplace, which is the first time ever. And they anticipate in the next decade there'll be five. So that next generation, which is ironically enough called iGen, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But so you think first time is four, now it's going to be five. The miscommunication miscues are just going to grow. And so when you look at it, there's so many different strengths that come into the workplace. So what I try to help organizations do is understand the unique strengths of each generation so you can leverage it accordingly. And a lot of people go, well, you know, this isn't new. Like, there's always been different generations. And when the boomers were coming into the workforce, that was one of the largest generations.
Right. So why is it different?
Yeah, I would say the X factor is social media. And so social media was created for the millennials, I like to say by a millennial, Mark Zuckerberg. And they were the really driving force behind that. So a lot of behavioral changes have occurred from social media. And obviously, that's a huge topic right now. So when you look at the generations, you can't help but look at social media as well and how that's affecting how you sell and work with people.
Absolutely. That social media impact is huge. I mean, that's what I think has made that Chick-fil-A issue so explosive.
Right.
Is because
posting
if it had just been printed in the New York Times once on one day,
done.
You know, it would have been over and done with. But now these things, they live on. And the way that we communicate has changed entirely. And it's done in such more of a public format.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
I think it's interesting, Ryan, too, that, you know, well, first of all, I think social media obviously is less of a challenge for the millennials and more of a challenge for, you know, the older folks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name names or point fingers at anyone in the room. but you know, I think it's really interesting that the way things have changed. I remember when Facebook first got started and it was becoming popular. I mean, originally, of course, it was just for the kids. They wouldn't even let the grown-ups get on it, right? And now everybody's on it, you know, grandma and whatever, Uncle Joe and everybody. But there was also a period of time, and I think some workplaces, oddly enough, are still like this, where you're not allowed to go on Facebook during work hours, which is so, like, backwards now because it is such a marketing tool. I mean, it is also a giant time suck, and I think we all can agree with that. But, it is having to now become a part of what you do at work.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point. And at that point, I think it becomes a trust issue, right? To where if you bring in some new, hungry, ambitious millennials, and you're saying, oh, by the way, you can't use social media, that they construe that as, oh, you don't trust me. And that starts right from the get-go a bad taste in their mouth.
Right.
So you got to be really careful with that.
Right, because they might have been hopping on Facebook saying, just started my new job, so excited to be working for company XYZ,
exactly.
The best in the marketplace.
Right.
You know? You have such a ripe opportunity to empower the millennials to either turn it into a win-win for you, and they turn around and create grand brand equity for you, or they turn around and say they're looking for their next job after day one and telling all their friends that company was not so much fun.
Right. Right.
Yeah, between the friends that I have that work, you know, I'm 32 right now, and a lot of my friends that are 5 years younger or 5 years older, a real differentiator in the marketplace is your ability to use your social media at work. It is amazing how many people will lose interest in their current company just because they can't jump on social media. And one of the first things I tell, you know, our employees when we're interviewing is, you get on social media all the time, and they light up. They love that. It's incredible that that is actually a differentiator in the marketplace now.
Well, the funny thing is, for my, I'm just a little bit older than you. Well, we're not counting. But I think, you know, it is really interesting because, of course, when I started out in the workforce, that did not exist. In fact, I think Al Gore had not yet invented the internet. So, but we had the phone, we had a telephone, and if you had a private office or even a Cuban, you could talk quietly. I called my mom on the phone.
Yeah.
So you have to look, I think, at computers and the internet and Facebook and all those things as a tool, and you have to trust your employees to be responsible with the tools that are in front of them, because people are going to, in the middle of the day, call their mom or Facebook their mom or whatever. And frankly, it's probably faster if they do it on Facebook than if they get on the phone. Yep. I mean, my mom wants to tell me what she bought at the grocery store. And, you know, at least on Facebook, I could give her a quick status update.
I love you. Have a good day.
Right. Move on.
And Danny, bring up a great point. And I love this quote, and I use it all the time. I think it was the chief marketing officer of GE is doing some phenomenal things on trying to kind of revamp their organizational culture and to kind of make it more appealing to that emerging workforce. But she states that it is irresponsible not to use the tools of today.
Yeah.
And so at GE, in their next executive meetings, I think next year, they're going to be distributing everything on an iPad. So you can imagine the different generations that are in that conference. So if you don't know how to use, an iOS, Apple device, you're going to be a little bit behind. But we're moving to a space where you have to be cutting edge. You got to constantly keep reinventing and innovating.
Right.
And I see the millennial generation as a generation that does that well.
Yeah.
So that really organizations should use them as an indicator and leverage that to innovate and keep growing and being cutting edge so you don't get stomped out by your competition. Mm-hmm.
I think my question, again, I mean, while we're focused on technology, which is a little bit off the topic, just in the sense that it's not about the people as much, but is, you know, the one thing I would think you have to be careful about, and I think, again, people kind of in my generation and a couple above me are thinking, well, that's great, but we don't want to hear about just what's cool. Like, just because it's cool to check in with Foursquare, is that really helping us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that you went to lunch at Joe's Pizza? I don't care about that.
Right.
You know, so you have to be careful, I think, about the younger generation just being like, this is cool, we should all be doing it. But if there's no business case for it, then no, we probably shouldn't all be doing it.
I mean, I believe that we're coming back to a time of one-to-one marketing. And you can create real one-to-one relationships with people over social media. You just have to understand the tools, and you have to have a genuine sense to connect with people.
Yeah.
Yeah, people have been talking for...
Oh, I think, Sandra, did you want to pipe in? Feel free. It's harder on the phone.
I wanted to pipe in because I love the comment that you made about, you know, just I think it's on the responsibility of those who are in the workplace currently to help steer our millennials in the right direction when it comes to, you know, how to use the tools and how to be responsible. And in our industry, there have been opportunities where folks have lost their jobs just because of the irresponsibility or not understanding the type of information that you're posting. Hey, I just opened an account for XYZ at our bank. And so, again, you're putting out their public information that is not public information for that particular individual. So, again, just being responsible, and I agree with what you said, just because it's cool, is it really a business case for it? But I think that responsibility falls on just the coaching and the type of environment that we foster for our millennials and just channeling that energy in the right direction.
Right.
So, Sandra, what has it been like at Bank of America as you've seen more millennials entering the employment ranks? You've still got a lot of these, as you know, baby boomers in there as well that have a lot of the knowledge capital. How have you guys approached creating a workplace that's really going to meet everybody's needs and allow them all to bring out their strengths?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And probably about 3 years ago, Bank of America started to recognize that, you know, this generational gap is just growing, and we definitely had to step up and do something to really bridge the gap and to help our millennials transition better into the workplace, but to also understand that we want to attract the best talent and retain the best talent, but also create the best talent that we have. And so we have taken sort of a multi-pronged approach. We've just introduced and launched last week our intergenerational employee network that's really going to help us sort of bridge the gap between the millennials and the baby boomers. And what was really interesting about what we found is we knew that there were gaps in the millennial generation, but we also found that there were gaps in the baby boomer generation as well. So even as the bank continues to evolve, and again, innovation is what we're all about because we understand where we need to be in order to stay competitive in this market, and certainly are ones to take that quantum leap. But we also understood that there were gaps on both ends, and so how do we certainly bridge that gap and really to help our both generations, if you will, and all of those in the middle, really make Bank of America the best place to work for all of our employees. So we feel that this intergenerational employee network will really help us to be able to do that, and then we'll have some other things that we're putting in place as well. But this is something that we recognized approximately 3 years ago and have just really started to, I guess, tap into the potential and what we see coming in the future.
Now, Ryan, you've worked with a lot of companies on creating tools and a framework for them to reach some of these goals. Tell me a little bit about the process that you go through when you're working with a client, trying to understand what their goals are and what's the best way to put something together that's going to make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. And I think Sandra and what they're doing at Bank of America is awesome. And I really applaud their efforts because it does, first and foremost, as I work with organizations, is first you have to understand what's going on in different generations and what makes up each generation, what are some of their strengths and tendencies and behaviors. And then the second part is appreciation. So you've got to first understand how do they like to communicate? Is it face-to-face, over the phone? What is it like? So as a millennial, I can maybe find some common ground with them or connect with them accordingly. But first and foremost, absolutely, it's understanding, kind of painting the picture of the landscape and then driving a little bit deeper on the tendencies of each generation. And what's helpful, too, and what a lot of organizations, I think, pull from it is if you really start understanding the generational landscape, is that each generation, they have certain traits, and then the next generation behind them takes some of those traits, but they also add on some different traits. And that kind of evolves as you go down the chain. So if you think about it and you really have a good understanding of the generational landscape, you can start positioning your brand, your product, your team, so that you can start positioning it for the next generation that's coming in. And obviously, that's a large generation. They're going to have a lot of spending power here in the future as well. So it's a lot of just good market research, essentially, as well.
Now, Robbie,
yeah, that's exactly what we found, Ryan. Just the research, you've got to be able to go in. And so we did. We were able to not only look at some of what's happening in the market, but within our company.
Mm-hmm.
What lines of businesses are these generations? What generations are represented? Where do we have gaps? You know, so again, just trying to understand within our own company where we are. So,
and what I love about it, too, is everyone, you know, we all have taken probably Myers-Briggs or DISC or StrengthsFinder, phenomenal tests. I love those types of tests. The only issue, I guess, or obstacle is that it is a test. So you actually have to administer it. If you're looking at generations, if I'm talking with someone on the phone or if I just see them for the first time, just looking at them, I have a framework if I understand the generational gaps on how to connect with them. So like Sandra's saying, when you look at your organization, you can just look at their ages and go, wow, we have a big bulk of boomers in this segment. Maybe if we couple that with a little bit more Gen X or what have you, you can really start formulating a plan by just looking at the numbers.
I completely agree with that, Ryan. But I would hesitate in putting individuals in buckets just based on age. I think, you know, oftentimes if you do just look at an individual and say, that person's a millennial or a boomer, you know, you could potentially be misjudging them. So I encourage employers and people in the business world to use those clues, but also to recognize that they are merely clues on how to really view those employees.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of factors you can take into consideration when you think about where your talent needs to be placed. And so certainly we have various parameters. This is just one, of course, additional parameter or lens that you can put on that process. The other thing you have to think about is your client. You know, what's your customer saying? What is it that they want or need? Because if you're not selling a product or fulfilling a need for a customer, it doesn't matter how many boomers, millennials, anything else you have working for you, you have got to be competitive in the marketplace. So, again, taking a lens and a look at that as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the client piece as well, because obviously they're the ones that, you know, you're there to serve ultimately. But as you're seeing the client landscape change, I mean, so B of A has a huge amount of customers that are in that older space, but they've now got a lot of millennials are serving. Is part of the objective of the intergenerational employee network to find ways to continue to innovate on the ways that you're serving customers' needs as well as they get younger?
That probably will be a phase two for them to start looking at. I think part of their objective right now is just to determine how do we bridge the gap within our company. And then once we do that, you're right, we do have some opportunity out there, and we have other ways to really understand what our customers are asking us for and what they need. And we really try to provide that and be as cutting edge as we possibly can to be sure that we're profitable. And so certainly iGen will be part of that story that will want to unfold over time. But their phase one right now is to really just focus internally to help us to understand what we have and as far as generations are, and how do we bridge those gaps just to create a better employee or teammate environment for the bank. Because, of course, if you're happy, we always say the quote, happy workers make happy customers. And so that's really our first goal. And then, yeah, definitely some of the research that will come out of that will help us when we think about the products that we offer our various clients. A lot of things that we do within the bank, we pilot within our own personnel first. So that's always a very interesting dynamic, just to see what our own, we become the customer for the bank. And I think when you can identify the various generations within your company and understand what they bring to the table, but also some of their challenges, then it will help us to better be able to target how we even pilot some of the products that we're offering.
Neat.
Happy workers equal happy customers. I love it.
It's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, Robbie, tell us more about Global Lead and this program that you founded.
Absolutely, absolutely. Global Lead started way back in 2008. I like to put a long history on that.
I like way back.
Way back. basically what we do is we lead transformative experiences abroad. And basically the context that you typically would know Global Lead in is that we are a study abroad program. We partner with the University of Georgia. And last year, we took over 200 students abroad to three different continents. We're in Greece, South Africa, and in Ecuador. And basically, we take students that are university age, and we put them through a personal development and leadership curriculum. And then we also, as they go abroad, we think that they should also give back to the communities that they're in. So we're really touching on all of the aspects that the millennials really, really value, which is personal development. They really want continuous learning. They want to become leaders. They really view themselves oftentimes as creating their own destiny. And you really need these tools of leadership and personal development to do so. In addition, Gen Y really, really wants to give back. They want to create a better world, and they're very mission and vision driven. And our program really allows them to cultivate their own personal vision for their lives and then to come back and use that on campus and also in their communities.
That's fantastic. So how do people get involved in the program?
Absolutely. We are on college campuses all over the country. And typically, we work through offices of international education. But we also really go straight to the source. We go straight to parents. We realize that parents really, in this generation, they are not only the decision makers, but they're the best friends. And it's so interesting to watch this generation interrelate with their mother. We'll potentially meet them at an orientation or something, and then we'll just pick up our phones, we'll tweet at their moms and put their handle on there as well, and they love it. You just can't imagine how creating that connection between parent and child really changes the game. And I think that's something that has never been done before.
Totally cracking up because I have a college-age daughter, and yeah, we
absolutely
are totally like, she
absolutely
just posted all these ridiculous things on Facebook about whatever stupid texts that we did with each other and whatever. We're complete idiots together. So
our Facebook page, you can't imagine how many comments are from parents.
Yeah.
And it creates so much energy.
So funny. And, well, what I want to know is how come you're restricting it to university kids? What if old people like me want to go on a trip?
We're very young. We're, we like to call ourselves babies, and phase two will certainly include different young professional groups and potentially other ages. Right now, we're nano niche focused on university students. And really changing the way not only that they see the world, but the way they see themselves.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I'm on a side track always. I do this all the time. But I do think it's interesting. There have always been, I think, programs for kids in college and kids right out of college, internships and, you know, management training programs and things like that. And with the way the economy has changed, there are so many unemployed or underemployed people of all generations now. And those great opportunities for internships and trips and learning experiences don't exist for the older generations. I would love to see Bank of America or somebody, you know, step out and say, you know, we have internships for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you come in and interview and qualify, it doesn't matter if you're 23 or 53, we'd love to have you because we recognize that everybody has talent across all the generations. Just saying, just putting it out there. You know, I think it's great that we all want to make sure the young people are happy, but can we make sure the old people are happy too? Really?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
So what are, I mean, yeah, I guess that brings up a good point. Is there like a form of, now that the millennials are getting all this attention, is there like a baby boomer jealousy factor going on? That's like, why are the millennials getting all the good stuff?
I know. I forget what all the, can you like define the age? I always forget which groups are which ages.
Yeah. As we're talking, I'm thinking, oh, those poor Gen X folks.
But getting ignored. Yeah.
It's not a bad thing, but I usually focus on boomers or millennials because I think usually tendencies of Gen Xers will either lean towards millennial tendencies or they'll lean towards a boomer tendency. So if you kind of make aware of those two big ones, then they'll kind of, you know, find their way in the in between. But
so boomers are usually what age and up?
Like, yeah, usually, I mean, you want 53, 70. There's so many different studies out there, so it's hard to kind of put a benchmark on them. But really, the millennials are born in the 80s and 90s, so they're 12 to 32. Xers, 33, 53.
Gotcha.
And it usually helps if you look at the age, too, because sometimes you throw out dates and people are like, well, where, how do I fit into that?
Wait, when was I born? Wait, right. What? Yeah, interesting.
And I love talking to you about the technology, too, because, you know, the youngest generation right now, they're still being born. They anticipate they'll be about 60 million strong, which is a substantial number. Millennials are currently 80, which is the largest. But you look at technology and how everything, we're just exposed to so much. And generations are usually defined by 20 years. And it's usually based on your behavior and certain events that happened that affected you in multiple years, in younger multiple years.
Sure.
Well, now that technology is advancing and culture is getting faster, a lot of studies are showing that generation gaps are getting smaller. So just because you're exposed to different events around the globe and it's 24/7 media. So some folks even say that the millennial generation is divided into two different generations, Generation Y and IY. But I just think it still kind of reinforces the fact that if there's miscommunication and strife in the workplace now with four generations, it's only going to increase and get worse as different slices of generations come into the workforce. So I think it's really crucial to get things in place now to understand the landscape, so you can be that much more positioned to evolve as the generations evolve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Robbie.
Yeah, I want to go back to the question that you asked earlier around, are baby boomers sort of jealous of all the attention that they're getting? I think that that's a great question. And so one of the things that we have found recently is as we, of course, as you know, in this economy, all companies have had to really step back and take a look at the way that they operate and determine the best operating model. And because of that, definitely there were employees that were impacted. And one of the things that sort of raised its hairy head was just around baby boomers just feeling like they were not valued or appreciated based on some of the decisions that were made. And there were comments in certain meetings that would be made as though, you know, to say I'm now the oldest person or I'm one of only of my peers that are left in this company. So we have had some challenges around that area, even where baby boomers are not feeling comfortable even expressing their age range or make references to certain things that would indicate their age.
Sure. Who wants to say I'm right, the one who doesn't understand Twitter because I'm in my 50s?
Because I'm old.
Right,
exactly. So just really understanding that. And I think we have to be very careful in thinking that one generation has all the answers. Because if it wasn't for the generations before, these generations wouldn't even be here. So I think you have to have that solid foundation. And the reverse mentoring is something that we're going to be instituting, which iGen is helping us to pilot a little bit of that right there in Atlanta, the reverse mentoring between millennials and baby boomers or even other generations, you know, within those families, to really help each other and to understand, you know, the various cultures and to start to bridge some of that gap. So, you know, you're right. There is we really do have to be very careful and very mindful of the decisions that we're making and not just use the generation as the one spectrum to say, hey, if you're a millennial, you're just, you know, you're a rock star. You're just knocking it out of the park. You also have to have the skill that go along with that.
Yeah,
because you know technology doesn't necessarily mean that you're skilled at the business in which you're trying to be a part of.
Right.
Yeah, and I'd absolutely agree. And the mindset I like to encourage every generation to embody is just kind of, I call it a generation edge, which you just kind of have a mindset that's bent on flexibility and flux, kind of like the GE example I gave is just a mindset of learning. I think that reverse mentoring is so crucial because the millennials need that mindset too, that I have something that I need to learn. And what I encourage a lot of the organizations we work with is that millennials want to grow and they want to learn, but they want the stuff that they can't get from Google because we grew up with instant answers. So where the boomers can impart with so much of their wisdom is how do you effectively negotiate a contract?
Right.
You know, those simple things that I can't get from Google is what I need from the boomers in the workplace. And so I
Absolutely.
Think, so it's really, and the other thing I use with a lot of our organizations, is I call it a Gen Guide. And it basically, it's a quadrant of you can use it with your organization or your teams, and you kind of map out where your generations are, where their strengths are. So kind of an example would be, let's say the millennials don't have a whole lot of experience with money. So they're kind of low on the totem pole in money. But if you have some boomers that are very highly skilled in the financial area, then they need to be paired in a group where they can be taught some of those financial tactics or what have you. So sometimes it just takes mapping it out, and that reverse mentoring is becoming so crucial because the older generations have so much knowledge, and knowledge transfer is becoming such a very hot topic and challenge in the workplace. Because how do you take a traditionalist or a boomer and bottle up all their information and give it to the next generation of employees? And sometimes it's hard if you can't put it all into technology or what have you.
Exactly.
So,
I mean, people tried. They rolled out all those fancy knowledge management systems, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but mm-hmm. found that it's obviously really difficult to capture that kind of business
yeah.
knowledge.
Right.
Somebody that's been mm-hmm. working at the bank for 20 years. How do you bottle that?
Yeah.
You can't download it into an app and give it to a 17-year-old to hit their ground running.
It's yeah. a shame.
I also think there is something to be said for stepping out of technology sometimes, and I think that sometimes the younger generation forgets about. I know I've worked in marketing in a variety of organizations, and with younger people, all they want to do is online marketing because it's so measurable and clickable, and you can count this and this and that. But sometimes a billboard works really, really well, and even though no one's clicking on it, everybody's seeing it. You're building brand awareness, and you know those 60-year-olds who don't go online, they need a bank also, for mm-hmm. example. You know what I mean? So there's times when, you know, advertising in a magazine, trying to reach somebody at the checkout line at Whole Foods or something versus on their computer is still relevant and important. And I think the older generation can sort of bring some of that experience, you know. So I think in marketing, in finance, in whatever, in all the different areas of business, there's that combination, I think, could be great for companies if they really value all of those, you know, yeah. inputs.
Yep. And just
yeah,
to bring
what Ryan said was really key when he talked about being flexible and being able to change with the times. I don't really care what generation you're in. If you're that type of person, that edge, I think is what you called it, Ryan,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be successful.
Yep.
Because
yeah.
that's the type of people that typically can make it through any type of storm or economic environment or changing times, but you've got to be flexible. And so if you have someone who is a baby boomer but they refuse to change, they're not going to be successful. If you have a millennial but they refuse to look back, they're not going to be successful. And I agree with you. Technology is not always the answer. If I get a handwritten note today, I look up at that individual and go, wow, that person has stood out, when handwritten notes were all we used to get. So, again, being able to step outside the box and do something that perhaps was done years ago that's not as popular today really wins you, really speaks highly of your flexibility and your ability to adapt in various ways.
Now, Raleigh, I'm curious that what you see in terms of the people that go on your trips or that you're meeting through the Global Lead Program, if you've been able to observe particular strengths or weaknesses. We've talked a lot about communication today, and I know that's something that I've heard in the media about the way that millennials communicate. They might be fast and it might be instant, a text, but it may lack some of the human skills that surround.
OMG, really... Elizabeth, WTF, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
So, Elizabeth, I think you're exactly right. I think within our business, I think we need to look at this both internally and externally. But internally, all of our employees are kind of in that range of 28 to 23. So we need individuals that can connect with these college-age students, but they also need to connect with our other customers, who we define as the university and their parents. So that skill set, they need to be able to communicate on both sides. So what they're really good at is shooting off Twitter messages and jumping on Facebook and checking in at Foursquare. And we encourage all of those because it speaks to one of our customers. But when you really get down to it, to the business case, you have to say, well, how do we connect with parents and universities? And the skills that I find myself teaching are, how do you walk into a meeting and present yourself in a professional manner? What is the dress that you need to use? How do you construct an email that doesn't have emoticons and smiley faces? And please don't use 10 exclamation points when you send an email to a provost. It is actually a big deal. And I think
this isn't a cheerleading rally.
It isn't.
It's
so
a business meeting.
It's fun to watch. It's so fun to watch because they really do communicate and they don't know that that's not acceptable in the workplace. When they do it, it really works well on Facebook, but it works really poorly with a parent who doesn't understand and thinks that they can't trust you and you're not credible as a result. And that underscores the real challenge, I think, with the communication of Gen Y right now.
What about eye contact? I've heard about that one too, Ryan. Any thoughts on eye contact?
Eye contact. No, I don't have.
I've had a lot of people complain to me about how the younger generation isn't that great about making eye contact, and maybe it's because they're used to, you know, communicating with a computer where you don't have to eye contact.
But then ADD's rampant, right? And so they're always looking for the next thing, and
maybe they're eye contacting someone else in the room.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm gonna come back to technology, and I had a discussion with a boomer friend of mine, and we kind of go back and forth. And, you know, I'm pulling out my phone right now to as an example. That, you know, when you pull out your phone, and our generation, the millennials, and I guess all of us would be guilty, right? When we have our head down a lot, buried in our phones, whether we be standing on the street, in a meeting, whatever it may be, we're down. And so people have talked about how do we get people to look up and look people in the eye.
Right, because you're kind of in this detached, like, I'm zoned out in my technology world. Especially, you know, you can walk around down the street and everybody has their earbuds in.
Yeah.
It's like, are we even in the society together anymore? Are we all just...
Yeah, and it was funny. We were just talking, and I don't know if you guys have seen this, but there's Google's working on a project called Google Glass, which is basically glasses that you wear. It's not really glasses, but they're frames of glasses, and there's a little screen in the top.
That. Yeah, it's like you're wearing
and so
your computer.
Yeah, exactly. So you walk around, and it's almost now like your phone's on your face.
Oh, jeez.
Now I don't know how this is going to play out, but
you know how many walking accidents there are going to be.
Yeah, right.
Holy crap!
But the idea here, the concept is, and again, I just like to start forecasting down the road because it's like, how do you position your brand accordingly, and how does that change the way you connect with customers or employees for that matter? But really, when you pull out your phone, your head's down. Well, they're trying to eliminate that kind of just contained in your phone and taking your head up and connecting. When I, you know, if I meet a new friend and I can see their tweets or their Facebook profile, and I can hopefully maybe connect with them in a real way and ask them about certain things that are happening. But that's just one way that I see potentially down the road of how we can kind of eliminate that. And we've eye contact, but you still might have to look over their head to see their Twitter stream going on. But but it's just interesting to think, how is technology evolving? What's next? And is that going to cause new strife? Is that going to cause new things? Or is it going to eliminate some of the challenges we have today?
Right. It's interesting. I keep wishing that they would invent the computer in the camera. I mean, the camera in the computer to be in the middle of the screen so that when you're Skyping somebody, you don't look so weird. Because you know how you always look like you're looking up or you're looking down, or you're looking at yourself, or you, I don't, you just look crazy looking.
Yes.
I hate that. You cannot look pretty on Skype. It's impossible. Impossible. Anyway, just saying. That's just my own little pet peeve.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
Someone needs to work on that. Can you put somebody on that, Ryan? Get one of those millennials on that, would you?
Now, Sandra, I know that you're obviously just at the forefront of launching this iGen program, but I'm sure a lot of thought and planning went into it before you guys officially made the launch. I'm curious some of the conversations that you had around what were the objectives, how are you going to like try and measure the success? Because, you know, obviously the intention is really an important one, but it brings up, you know, how do you put metrics around whether or not this is what we're doing is really effective or working or bringing us closer to our goals?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So, you know, we started a study, like I said, about 3 years ago, probably about in 2009. We have a global diversity and inclusion organization and a council that really wants, you know, sometimes it comes through the employee ranks or someone will raise the question or we'll get multiple questions around a certain topic, if you will, that we really need to address within the company. And so they really started doing some work, developed a work stream that focused on analyzing the challenges and opportunities within our generational diversity. And then once they conducted some focus groups, and there were four key areas that they looked at. They looked at communications, they looked at life priorities, they looked at retention, they looked at recruiting, they looked at work style, and then definitely collected all of that information. And then once we found that, gosh, this is really something we need to explore, we kicked off a work group to really think about the feasibility of launching an employee network to channel a lot of that in generational diversity work that we wanted to do. So some of the desired goals and outcomes that we want to do is raise awareness of generational diversity. So we definitely want to drive productive interactions across all generations. We want to make sure that we promote employee and business growth opportunities. We want to maintain focus on generational diversity and the trends. So really look at the knowledge that's critical to attract, retain, and develop a generationally diverse mix of employees. And then we also want to foster an inclusive environment. So those are really our goals and objectives that we have right now. I think some of the opportunity will be for us to really think about how will we measure that at this point. With all of our employee networks, which at Bank of America, iGen is just one of 11 employee networks that we have established here at the company. And we do have a way that we've started to think through how are we tracking the success. And so we've given them five key focus areas or priorities. And within each of those priorities, we've asked them to measure themselves against whether they are foundational all the way up through optimal performance within each of those priorities. So we will do the same for iGen once they sort of find their voice and really begin to work on some of these key objectives and priorities that they've set before themselves to really look at how successful they've been. I'm sure there'll be traction and measurement that we'll be able to do in some key areas, really around the attracting, retaining, and creating a multi-generational workplace. So those will be measurements that we can make pretty immediate because we can definitely pull that type of data very easily here at the company.
Awesome. Very comprehensive.
Yeah.
As I expected.
Absolutely.
Now, Robbie, when people go through your program and have this amazing experience through Global Lead, what are some of the things that they come out of it with now? How has it impacted them?
That's a great question. A lot of our students that go abroad, they're really seeking that life-changing moment. And we often say that life really is about those moments where there's a shift. There's a shift in consciousness. And so what we do is we take these students abroad, And yes, they're in idyllic locations, potentially in Greece or Cape Town, South Africa, or Ecuador. But we really take them into communities and take them out of their comfort zones. We really put them in situations that forces them to be stretched both mentally and physically. And specifically what that means is, you know, they're getting in there and they're getting their hands dirty, helping out a community and making those personal connections. And it really forces them to question, you know, is my society doing things correctly? Am I doing things correctly? You know, what do I want to do with my life? And we really take that to the next level. We have an adventure curriculum that we put in place. And we, you know, the question is always, you know, if your best friend jumped off a bridge, would you? And I'm here to say that is pretty much 100% true. almost every one of our students jumps off bridges. We go canyoning. We go hiking. Just incredible adventures. And I think we could all speak to those moments, those experiences in life where we didn't know if we could do it, and then we broke through that wall, and on the other side was opportunity. And that's really what the program really creates, is that vision for yourself. And we actually have them write a comprehensive, I think it's a 5,000-word paper on their vision for the next 10 years.
Wow.
And I go to parents and I say, guys, what is that worth to you? What is the intentionality of your son or daughter sitting down and creating a vision for who they want to be? What's that worth? And there is just no value. And as they go into the workplace, to really know who they are, what their values are, what they want to do with their lives, and how that interrelates with a company, there is so much power. I think any of us that have interviewed someone before would know, if someone knows who they are, they're going to contribute on day one. And that's really what Global Lead's all about.
Absolutely. I think more and more people are waking up to the idea that it's not just what you do, but the person that you're being while you're doing the
right.
doing.
Yeah. Right.
And I think more companies are starting to realize that too. I mean, yes, there's work to be done. There's productivity to take place. But who are we being while we're doing the work? And it seems like it's more important to the millennials to really tap into the meat of, like, the who am I? Whereas I think in some of the older generations, just due to the nature of the economy and the environment at that time, you know, they didn't have the luxury to take that quest of, like, let me really find myself, you know, until they figured out how to make a living. But now we've got people that want to find themselves before they figure out how they want to make a living, because they see it as intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would say that one of the biggest things I encourage organizations to do is know the why. Know the why you're having a meeting. Know the why you're building an organization. Know the why you're hiring this person. And empower your employees with the why around things. Because if you know the impact of what you do, you know, really helps and serves people, I think you're much more able to called to put better effort and be excited about your tasks when you know the why.
So what are some examples? We're running out of time here, but how, you know, as we look to the future, what are some of the things that companies can do to engage their millennials, to keep them engaged? I know we've kind of talked about a lot of tactics today. Any other suggestions or ideas around that?
I think know the why is huge. Robbie alluded to what attracts millennials to his organization is the continuous learning. And what the Bank of America is setting up with iGen, that is such a ripe environment for people to learn and grow. And that's really, really resonates with the millennials, because they want transferable skills. They want to go into an experience or an organization and gain a skill that they could go to a different industry, they could go to a different role in that company and still use that skill but gain another one. And so I think that's really powerful. But again, that starts with knowing the why for the individual and that organization. As if you come in here, this is the unique skill you're going to get, and here's how it's going to help you.
And I think Sandra also made a great point with this program that they're running, bringing all the generations together to communicate in one organization, in one program, and facilitating that communication. I think that's huge.
Well, let's make sure our listeners can get in touch with our fabulous guests for today. So, Ryan, let's start with you. Website contact information.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can go to www.ryan-jenkins.com to find out more information, or you can follow me on Twitter at the Ryan Jenks, and that's RyanJenks. And or you can email me at rj@ryan-jenkins.com. but thanks for having me on.
Awesome. It's been our pleasure. And Robbie, the Global Lead Program?
Yes, you can check out Global Lead at www.globalleadprogram.org. Check us out on Facebook at global_lead or on our Facebook, the same. My email is robbie@globalleadprogram.org, and you can reach out to me and love to chat.
So cool. We'd love to have you guys come back on and tell us more about what you've got going on. And finally, Sandra, everybody knows bankofamerica.com, but are there other resources or websites that we should check out to find more about the iGen program or new initiatives you've got going on?
Yeah, I think www.bankofamerica.com is really the best place for the public to go. Keep in mind that all of these programs that we do have, these are internal programs to our bank employees, so they're not so much information that we have advertised out on our bankofamerica.com website, but certainly lots of great information around other efforts that the bank gets involved that's community-wide or community-based.
And Sandra, if someone is looking for a job and they want to get to work for such a great company, is there a specific spot to look for jobs at Bank of America?
Yeah, if you go on the www.bankofamerica.com site, you'll see a careers button, and you can just click on that, and it'll take you into our job search site, which will let you know all of the roles that we have available.
Excellent.
Now we've got enticed top millennial talent waiting to join
right.
BFA.
Right.
Here they come.
We'd love to have you at Bank of America. In fact, we look at all generations.
Exactly.
Thank you for that. And I should also point out, well, I shouldn't, but I'm going to point out that I'm not actually a baby boomer. I'm a Gen Xer. So there you go. I don't want to be any older than I actually
go,
am.
Dana.
Okay.
Getting younger every day.
That's right.
Slip that in.
Very important. All right. So
wait,
it's time...
your voice doesn't sound like a baby boomer. So
thank you, darling. Thank you. We're best friends now, you and me.
So thanks so much for everybody for joining us. Dana has our in-town update to bring us on home. What's going on in the ATL
well,
this week?
Well, I always mention, and I'm going to keep doing it until I get myself over there, but every Wednesday is Food Truck Wednesday at Underground Atlanta. So you got to go check that out. I have really got to go check that out. Let's see. Tomorrow, we've got the Green Market at Peachtree Center. There's a new symposium, the Welch Symposium on Death, that's opening. You can get the information on all this stuff on atlantadowntown.org. Also, just so you know, we had on, what was the theater we had on the other day? I'm like, my brain is dead. But anyway, their performance.
The Theatrical Outfit.
Thank you. Theatrical Outfit. The Adventures of High John the Conqueror. This is the last week to catch that show.
Oh, yeah. I really want to see that.
So check that out. And then I'm rushing a little bit because I don't want to run out of time. But a little farther afield, you should be aware that in Midtown at the Fox right now, Peter Pan opened last night and I think is running through the weekend. And can I just say, I went to see it last night. I got some free tickets, yay me. But it's Kathy Rigby, who is a baby boomer, playing Peter Pan, which I was a little bit afraid of. I was a little thinking like, first of all, I remember when she started doing that however many years ago, and I thought, well, that, she's a woman, and it's weird. And she's playing a boy, and then there's a girl that's, I don't know, it's very,
but hasn't it always been played by a woman?
Yeah, but I always thought that was like a little weird, you know? I guess it was like ahead of its time,
right?
You know? A little transgender action going on or whatever, sure. I don't know. Anyway, a little cross-dressing, I don't know. But I was, you know, at least she was younger at the time. But now I think she's 59 years old, and she's playing a little boy. And I was sort of like, I don't know.
Good
but
for her.
I got to tell you, I was sitting in the balcony last night. Now, I was far enough away that I couldn't really see her face that well, but she did an amazing job. She is as spry as a 12-year-old, I swear to God. So
that's
don't be afraid. Go check it out. It was really cute. I mean, it's really, I think the show is sort of geared more to children. I mean, it's really a kid's story, but it was very well done. Very, very nice show at the Fox. So check that out. And then also, even a little bit farther afield in Buckhead, I just want to mention that if you didn't catch it in the news, that they are actually restarting the Buckhead Atlanta project. Oliver McMillan Development Corporation, I guess is what it's called, is restarting that 1.5 million square foot mixed use project where they halted construction. I think it was, 3 years ago.
Wow,
and it's just been sitting there as like this, you know, in the middle of Buckhead. Just, you know, and now it's actually going to start up
that
again.
That is exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I think right now the only things you can do in that general area are like go to Fido or Hermes and buy a scarf. And that's it. And that's it.
Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah.
Cheesecake.
But that's sort of on the other side of it, right? That's on the Peachtree side.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
if you go
right.
on Buckhead Avenue, there's like nothing there anymore. And it used to be kind of a happening spot.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will actually for real kick into gear and we'll see, you know, I'm sorry for all the people that live right around that have to deal with the construction, but I think hopefully the good news is that it will eventually get done, which is going to help the property values in the area. It's going to help Atlanta on the whole, I think. So yay for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's about all I have. And so we gave everyone's contact information. So I certainly at least want to, again, thank everybody for being here today with us. Again, Ryan Jenkins, millennial behavior expert. We've all learned a lot, I think, today. And Robbie Reese from Global Lead and Sandra Quince from Bank of America. So thank you to all of you. And Elizabeth, thank
Absolutely.
You to you.
Stay tuned for Southern Hospitality. Coming up next, we will be talking with Adam at the Nook on Piedmont Park. I'm Elizabeth Gordon with my lovely co-host, Dana Barrett, and you've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more at AtlantaDowntown.com.
And we'll see you next week.